book, Capital V Prime, starting April 23rd, 2008, and running through January 2009. Looking at the beginning, page one, Wednesday, April 23rd, on making sure that we understood how to measure fluorescent intensity using different PMTs. That's the photomultiplier voltage, basically. So what the T means. Photomultiplier voltages, just called PMTs. So in order to cover the wide range of fluorescence observed with the different fluorescent proteins, we need to be able to use various photomultiplier voltages, PMTs, and convert the intensities back to a reference standard voltage. And this was the Mike's working on the correction factor, I think, with also with this PMT versus fluorescence intensity work was with Mike Altenberg and Ben Blaisdell, and is in the process of being published. Different ways of making that correction over the next few pages. Now, looking on page 7, Saturday, April 26th, at how to look at the binding in different parts using image J. Some general thoughts about the whole situation. Sunday, April 27th, page 11. Apparent sibling coefficients in the basement membrane depending on at least four things: oxygen effect, always present diffusion, the size effect is less than for the first effect, and flow, and new thought binding of the proteins to the GBM by ion exchange and or other reversible binding. Maybe proteins get bound to the basement membrane, so that and that new thought was looked at a little bit more on page 10 and maybe avoidable by using Perlecan no sulfate mice or by a polyamine, spermidine, etc. But I did set up some tests of what might happen if the basement membrane bound proteins. Whether we'll come to those or not, I'm not sure. Whether they were recorded in the book, but probably they are. So here was our image compared with Morita et al. 2003. Looking at binding. That's our image, was from 08 to 2307 image compared to Morita on page 12. a solution here on page 17, Friday, May 9th, to a lung problem of the GBM binding versus fluorescence. Uncertainty regarding the bright fluorescing structure that we are calling a basement membrane GBM and the very low fluorescence of most of the intercapillary space raise the question whether the space is occupied by red blood cells or red blood cells plus plasma or something else, and micro stained some sections that have part of albumin or ovalbumin labelled or transferrin or BSA injected, and the results clearly demonstrate that often the glomerular capillaries appear empty because they are filled with mesangial cell nuclei or endothelial nuclei, and less often they're filled with red blood cells. So one can often see very little plasma within the glomerular capillaries. This is in fact quite correct, and the images on page 16 show that nuclei are occupying the capillary space and also not quite so clear red cells, but nonetheless convincing. So that not so clear, not so frequent is the correct word. Most promising in areas is areas of red cells, since we may be able to use plasma perfusion, etc., etc., and get good transglomerular basement membrane scans. But at least we understand now what was happening to make the images so much of basement membrane and not of capillary space. So here is the beginning of modelling this sort of thing by making a column in which various ion exchange media were present. What one might try. And comments on page 19, regarding the overall situation. I can see no way to prove in vivo binding except to show differences with, 40,000 molecular weight fluorescent dextrans that are neutral or anionic or cationic, because using the type of strategy many other people have used. But I set up a column to try to mimic this sort of situation. And this is continued on the following pages, getting better with time. So the GBM model continued. On page 25, Tuesday, May 20th, I have tested the various column simulations / models of an adsorption flow through the model to replicate my hypothesis that binding doesn't make much difference to the eventual filtration. A look at on the following page, going back to how to look at the real experiment, and page 27, Thursday, May 22nd. A great deal of information can be obtained across these scans, but for real quantitation, Mike's outline and count at higher magnification is better, etc. And in fact, that's what we eventually settle on. There's some thoughts on the flow across the basement membrane on page 29, Friday, May 23rd, and on the opposite page, that clearly the velocity of movement of liquid through the slits is going to be very high, much higher than the velocity of movement of liquid through across the basement membrane, with a diagram to show what was happening, which may explain in part why, despite the fact that diffusion could neutralize the effect of the basement membrane in terms of size exclusion, it might be abrogated by the fact that diffusion is not able to overcome flow when it's as high as it would be in the slit diaphragm region. For example, that as the comment on this page says, a transport also depends on area, so the velocity effect is approximately squared. This is not affected if the flow is really uniform or really intermittent. So some thoughts on how flow affects or counteracts diffusion. So the critical sentence being that talking about transport by diffusion versus flow, this probably means that diffusion does not play much of a role in transfer basement membrane albumin flow, since the basement membrane effectively has no downstream space in which to accumulate diffused albumin. And so I'm not worrying so much about diffusion neutralizing the effects of permeation differences. May 23rd, a gap to June 17th, Nancy's birthday. Back from the first big Nobel tour, going to various places where people wanted to hear a speaker who had got the Nobel Prize, which lasts for about a year and then is replaced by the next crop. So here are images now looking much more encouraging of particles that we were taking after enhancement of the images with gold. Particularly amino gold in this case. Monday, July 7th, page 39, some thoughts as usual, and on the left hand side is on page 38 are some images from, a couple of images from the literature, of which the one by Yurchenko and Urea from 1993 article is particularly significant from what we've done more recently, because it's pointing out that the double collagen for laminin polymer in isolation does not appear to be able to produce a sieve sufficiently tight to exclude small proteins. In other words, the collagen 4 and laminin polymer is structural, not size selective. A conclusion that I'm being able to amplify in the paper that I'm at this time, but this is the end of December 2015, that I'm now writing, that summarizes Mike's work and all the other work that's gone on in trying to test the basement membrane permeation hypothesis. So I'm still travelling rather, because here is a small gap between Friday, July 4th, and Saturday, July 19th, back from Copenhagen and Berlin, and a few days in the United Kingdom. Some thoughts about what might be happening. On Friday, July 25th, page 45, a note of Ben Bleasdale, looking at what they'd been obtaining with Oxen's equation. There was a design error in the albumin GFP sequence, which was not seen in the computer simulation. So some error in the albumin GFP construct. And so a serious checks of the sequences again on page 51, Tuesday, July 29. Correction plan for the problem on Tuesday, July 29th, page 53, with the usual number of steps, in this case 5. So we see that those corrections being made, hopefully ending on Saturday, August 16th, page 63, the final correction step. Conclusion that all are correct and now continue to use colony 12, V prime 63 colony 12 for that work. With albumin GFP. I'm looking to see whether any of this has worked. And page 71, Thursday, August 28. Plasma tests with SDS gels and native gels by Jen Wilder that show nothing additional in the region of albumin or any decrease of anything significant. No protein conclusion, no protein product. That's of the old albumin GFP, presumably the one that had the mistake in it anyway. Working on an ovalbumin construct. Friday, September 12th, step 3, page 81. Many revisions to strategies. Revised strategy, page 83, September 15th. Now getting up to eight steps. Red fluorescent protein preparation on Tuesday, September 16th, page 85. Usual sorts of things. Final assembly of an RFP of a blue fluorescent, but it looks like B. No, red R. A red fluorescent protein, ovalbumin. Sequence on page 93, red fluorescent protein albumin, final assembly, Tuesday 30th, page 93, the number of times that they have seen final assemblies. But V prime 93, colony 1, looked pretty good. Here on page 95, more sequence checks and reminding what it is that we're sequencing. Thymidine kinase, albumin, RFP, red fluorescent protein, ovalbumin. So the albumin promoter driving a red fluorescent protein of ovalbumin is what is being attempted. Interpretation questions or thoughts on Thursday, October 9th, Friday, October 10th, page 99, a comparison of trigvarsin versus OS function of the slit diaphragm, remembering that trigvarsin thinks of the slit diaphragm as being a molecular sieve, and I just think it's not, it's too large to act as a sieve, and it's just a structural component. With the diagram that I think basically is a correct diagram of nephrin being a structural element that holds two cell podocyte food processors together so that they can stand the tension due caused by the pressure differences. So some thoughts on how it might be checked. Worrying about getting the right sort of material for transmission electron microscope of the kidney of the mouth, thinking about maybe using some of the devices that have been used, that are used regularly for human kidney biopsy, on page 103, tested but never came to fruition. Now, considering duplication of nephrin and deletion of nephrin, to have a model that one might be able to combine the two. The deletion, of course, is already available, but the duplication is not, and then one might combine the two anyway. Page 105, Thursday, November 6. Nephrin exons 42, exons 4 through 22 to duplicate or delete. Seven steps. And a computer simulation of that confirms its feasibility of steps 1 through 7. Page 107. It would be good if some fragments could be used for the duplication and the deletion. But the deletion mode uses the other ends of the fragment with some diagrams. Page 107. Tempted to think about the application of this general idea of basement membranes to other situations. Friday, December 12th, page 113, choroid plexus and the ciliary processes. Over the last few weeks, I've considered the possibility that trace amounts of plasma proteins in the cerebrospinal fluid of the aqueous humor are due to gel-like properties of their basement membranes or interstitial stroma. So getting tempted to think about other situations where in the brain or the eye basement membrane behavior might occur. But with the overall conclusion, the connection with the kidney is rather tenuous, and the significance for health, etc., of increases in the proteins is not very great. Therefore, continue with the kidney, GBM, lymphatics, as the main topic for the grant. I'm thinking about a grant still. Visit to Pittsburgh on Friday, January 2nd, had been completed. This is a gap between December 18th and January 2nd. The lab was closed from Friday the 19th to Monday the 5th, and so I visited Pittsburgh. Looking at the various things that we could use, that many papers in the 1960s and 70s used ferritin and polyanionic or polycationic materials to show that it doesn't enter and bind to the basement membrane, etc. And back to Jared again. Worrying about binding. So I went to see Royce Murray, who at UNC is an expert on nanoparticles. It was a critical meeting, really, where we went to ask him basically for help or advice. Mike and I met with Royce and presented an overview of our problems and asked for advice. He suggested that we make some particles by direct synthesis and size fractionate them and use those. In other words, don't worry about the literature, etc. Just jump in and do the experiment. And that really was me getting hooked into working with nanoparticles, which has been quite central to much of my work ever since. Royce and Murray says, go and do it. Don't read about it. Just find out what happens by doing it. And at the bottom of this page, 119, is some of my thoughts that the negatively charged glutathione-coated particles are Schaffet L, are small, and could form a start. They are very stable. The size could probably increase by decreasing the amount of GSA or by isolating, etc., etc. And in fact, guided my initial thoughts continuing on page 118, a note from Hanfield's patent that the preparation of fluorescein conjugated nanogold started with a triphenylphosphine nanogold in methanol, etc., etc. And a nice exclamation mark over Brynäs et al., including Hanfield, the Journal of the American Chemical Society in 2008, controlled the size of GSH particles by varying the pH of the initial polymer and can make / use mixed ligands. So, beginning of these experiments. And immediately the thought of these experiments on January 6th and typical preparation being commenced on Wednesday, January 7th, so not much incubation period. Starting with 1% solution of gold chloride, HAUCl4, very acidic, and glutathione and sodium boron hydride. It can be done conveniently in a scintillation vial with a stirring bar, and then the first attempt is shown as a grid image on page 120 with Bingo, but the extremely heterogeneous mixture of particles. Nonetheless, the raw particle in V prime 121C, which is a reduction in the presence of ammonium bicarbonate. Looking at the effects of pH on Friday, January 9th, and we'll now see a whole series of experiments trying to understand how to make these different size particles. Also thinking about free radicals. It's on the January 11th, page 125. it might be a free radical pathway. Thiol citrate being considered on Monday, January 12th, page 127, aim to increase the reduction to gold uncharged, pH 2, pH 8.6, pH 9.2, etc. And some images on the left-hand page, 126, the particles are very big, but more uniform inside. Using a Wisconsin recipe, which is a very simple recipe, of taking gold chloride and sodium citrate and boiling it, which produces, and has been known for a long time, to produce particles, because the citrate can act as a reducing agent and also as a capping agent to stabilize the particles that result. So following up on that, Tuesday, January 13th, page 129. Attempt to obtain a GSH stabilized citrate reduction product, and we'll see continuing efforts of this sort. Just look on Wednesday, January 14th, page 133, at particles that one could buy, on gridding them, 2.5 nanometer particles, 5.0 nanometer particles, and 10.0. And they're really very beautiful, but they're also quite dilute and also expensive. So I decided still to continue to try to make them myself. And their comparison of the images at 100,000 magnification of the citrate particles, V prime 127-C-8 image showing the citrate particles. Nonetheless, every now and then a return to constructs, nephrine phages on page 135 being looked at again. I thought that lower pH might lead to bigger particles, Saturday, January 17th, page 141, an attempt to change the particle size by changing the pH. Beginning to put some of these particles onto a column. Monday, January 19th, Sunday, January 18th, page 143. Now, having enough experience to begin to think about the stability of the product. So Wednesday, January 21st, page 145, a review of the stability of the of what particles were stable, with already probably something of the order of 15 different preparations, and which was stable and which was not. Mm. Wednesday, January 21st, page 147, trying a different stabilizing agent, not glutathione anymore this time, but sustain. With the product B' 146.75 appears to be stable. And Thursday, January 22nd, page 149, what turned out in the end to be the method that we finally adopted, but of course not knowing yet, using diethiothreatol and sodium boron hydride. turned darkish brown and precipitated mainly at different stages, and back, and etc. etc. And what happened? Not terribly well documented or illustrated here, but it is in fact the beginning of what we later adopted as standard method. Looking back at some of the earlier products, Friday, January 23rd, V' 130 versus and V' 127M revisited, but V' 127M had gone completely clear. This is a little bit ambiguous here. Let's try that again. Friday, January 23rd, V' 130 / V' 127M revisit. It's completely clear, means there isn't any visible precipitate, but it's less coloured, brown with a purplish tinge, etc. So, looking at these particles again and testing them by centrifugation on page 151. So not happy with the column at the present, sort of thinking about the diethiothreatol purification by centrifugation. A number of different preparations from 149, B' 149. What is stable and what are not stable. Where P and S, V prime, T and B are different fractions of, or different precipitations, not very critical. Test of lipoic acid on Wednesday, January 28th. Thinking that the lipoic acid, which has a disulfide bond, would be reduced by sodium boride hydride and then act in a suitable way. This was a combination of lipoic acid and diethiothreatol. V' 157 LAD. A little too complicated. test of lipoamide on page 161 and the thioglycerol on page 160. And with those tests, we end book V prime.